Schlieff versus Barnhart, Mr. Schernecker.
May it please the court, my name is Jim Schernecker and I'm appearing for Barbara Schlieff. This is a Social Security, a claim for Social Security disability benefits. Barbara Schlieff, age 52, who is almost of advanced age and marginal education, brings this review of the denial of her claim for Social Security disability benefits before this court, basically on four errors. The first is the failure by the both of the consultants for the commissioner and the administrative law judge and the commissioner to even mention the opinions, findings, and a decision by the Wisconsin Department of Vocational Rehabilitation finding she was unable to work. Number two, that the administrative law judge and the commissioner failed to accord greater weight to the opinion of the treating physician, Dr. Ishii, and third, that the administrative law judge failed to comply with the sequential five-step analysis of the Code of Federal Regulations in finding that she sustained a severe impairment. And the fourth ground for appeal is a pervasive factual error in not even mentioning the 20 years of severe sexual, emotional, and physical abuse that Barbara Schlieff suffered in her life. Briefly, I would touch on the 20 years of abuse that has been omitted.
What is the relevance to that? I don't understand.
Well, what it generated was a condition, a fragile condition.
Well, that's the question. The question is the condition. The causes is something else again. I don't know why you have to get into the causes of the condition.
Because it's 40% or more of her life that was ignored.
No, I don't understand that. Look, there's a question, how severe is her depression? That's one question. Another question is, what are the causes? Well, you don't have to get into the causes in order to evaluate the condition.
Well, the condition was that when she attempted to return to work in 1997, she was suffering from chronic pain in her back and right leg. She had major depression. She had irritability. She had anxiety. There was a passive ideation of suicide. She was having trouble sleeping. All of these matters were set out in detail by Dr. Ishii. There's five.
Now, you say, Corinne, our cases have said that it's supposed to give more weight to the treating physician, but that's because the treating physician is assumed to know a lot about the person. But she didn't see him very frequently, did she?
Well, I believe we pointed that out, Your Honor, that that's a flat-out error of fact. She saw him at least five times. The administrative law judge used that as his primary basis for attacking Dr. Ishii's opinion that she had only seen him once, and we pointed out in our brief.
Well, I thought the argument was that she'd only seen him once before he formed his judgment that she was disabled.
And what happened later,
he saw her more frequently, but he saw her afterwards, but he'd already formulated the judgment, and he did that in what seemed precipitately, just after one meeting.
Well, that's not what the government is alleging, that's for sure. And she had five visits with him. One of the grounds that the government is using to attack his opinion is that his earlier finding on Ms. Schlieff was that she was improving, whereas later his opinion was that it was becoming more aggravated. And of course, this makes the findings by the administrative law judge unreliable. Continuing with the errors by the administrative law judge.
I didn't understand the weight you gave to the finding by this state agency. What are we supposed to do with that? I mean, do we know what criteria they use? What procedures?
Well, when you asked for what procedures they used, that was a similar question that was raised by the commission. If the attack was going to be made on a sister agency, it should have been done at the fact-finding level, and no, there wasn't even any advertence to the decision. And I think we have to look at the backdrop of the Wisconsin Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. We're not talking about something emanating from a state that's a refuge for sots and shirkers. Wisconsin's W-2, Wisconsin Works. This is an agency that speaks for a state that is leading on cutting down welfare rolls. This is certainly not an agency that is going to bend over backwards for a disabled worker.
So you're saying that there's really nothing in the record that deals with the procedures they use, but you're just saying they look very carefully at who would qualify and who would not qualify and who they would find was not capable of working. But there's nothing in the record that goes through the process that they follow in order to get that determination. You're saying that's not fair because nobody challenged it. The finding.
What is there is several pages of the analysis by the division setting out the physical and emotional evaluation of this lady and the people who were involved. And as far as their regulations and as far as what precise step-by-step procedure they followed, nobody questioned it.
One question. Is it identical to the Social Security Administration's criteria for disability?
No, sir. It's a sister agency, and as I understand the law in the Seventh Circuit, it's entitled to great weight.
Well, it depends on the criteria. It depends whether it has similar criteria.
Well, the conclusion by the agency was that this lady was not able to engage in competitive employment, which is very similar to saying that she cannot or she is unable to participate in substantial gainful employment. I don't see a gainsay between the two. Going on to the pervasive factual disparity that was lacking by either of the psychological consultants, neither one of them adverted at all to the psychological impairments and suffering that this lady went through before she came into the nation's labor force. The psychological evidence to be presented at a hearing such as this that was before the administrative law judge, it must be presented in a fashion that a reasoning mind would accept. No reasoning mind would accept conclusions from a psychologist that omits 40% of a person's history. As far as the track of this lady and credibility is a huge issue. And what we see here is a couple of animus findings by the administrative law judge. Why does the administrative law judge worry that part of her depression is due to psychosocial stressors caused by household finances and anger at the employer to whom she returned to work with this list of problems that I've just set out for you? What's the purpose of that? Why set out that this lady is able to make dolls when that's one of the activities that the Wisconsin Division of Vocational Rehabilitation provided to her as home-based activities? There's no requirement that this lady be catatonic or locked in her house or a bed case. The issue is whether or not she's able to engage in substantial gainful employment. I don't understand these other findings by the judge, which takes us down to The commissioner says, well, the judge, in regard to findings of severe impairment, the judge must have found that, or we can must assume that the judge found that. Or in regard to the basis for the psychologist, they included nearly all. These are terms of art that seem to an attempt to brush under the rug severe findings, severe gaps in the finding, which when taken together overwhelmingly seek reversal.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Chernecker. Mr. Duclos?
May it please the court. The ALJ discussed a number of reasons for discounting Dr. Ishii's opinion, but the most significant reason that he offered was the discrepancy between Dr. Ishii's progress notes, which indicated that Ms. Schlieff started out with only moderate depression and then consistently improved with antidepressant medication. And that reason, standing alone, irrespective of the merits of the other reasons that the ALJ gave, is sufficient to support discounting Dr. Ishii's opinion. For example, at the initial examination in October 1st, Dr. Ishii found, based upon a GAF rating, that she had only moderate symptoms. He then started moderate symptoms of depression. He started her on antidepressant therapy. By later that month, at a follow-up examination, Ms. Schlieff indicates that her symptoms were much better, that she was able to focus better, and that her mood had improved. And then in February of 98, in the same letter that he opined she was disabled due to depression, Dr. Ishii indicates that the antidepressant medication was providing mild to moderate relief. And then it continues. In June of 98, Dr. Ishii again indicates that the antidepressant medication was partially relieving Ms. Schlieff's depression, and he states that now the main cause of her symptoms appears to be stress associated with not working and with her physical condition, but not depression. And then finally, at the hearing in March 99, Ms. Schlieff testified that her antidepressant medication was helpful. So if she started out with only moderate symptoms at the initial examination, and the medical reports consistently indicate improvement with antidepressant medication, the ALJ could reasonably find that it was unreasonable for Dr. Ishii to conclude that she was all of a sudden permanently disabled due to depression. And as a result, the ALJ turned to the only other medical opinions of record bearing on Ms. Schlieff's mental condition, and her mental condition is the subject of this appeal. And both of the state agency doctors concluded that she could perform, despite her mental condition, these were state agency psychological consultants, both concluded that Ms. Schlieff could perform unskilled, routine, low-stress type of work despite her mental condition. Now, Ms. Schlieff has argued that the ALJ improperly gave too much weight to the first of the two state agency opinions because Dr. Warrior, that state agency consultant, appears to have adopted the analysis of a disability examiner. But we submit that there's no reason that a state agency doctor couldn't adopt an analysis provided by a layperson if she found that was compelling. But in any case, we have a second state agency doctor in the record that came in later and therefore was able to evaluate more of the evidence of record. And he too concluded that despite Ms. Schlieff's mental condition, she could perform unskilled, low-stress work. And these state agency opinions were consistent with the evidence that indicated she improved with antidepressant medication, were also consistent with her activities, which indicated that she was able to make handmade dolls for profit and that she was also able to play bingo.
What about the DVR's finding of disability and the fact that that wasn't mentioned or given any weight?
I think that's completely irrelevant with respect to an assessment of her mental condition, because if you look at the DVR's rationale, their explicit rationale, they say they base it only on her physical condition. There's no mention of her mental condition in their rationale that she was disabled. And so therefore I think it's completely irrelevant to this appeal, which is based exclusively on the ALJ's assessment of her mental condition. But indeed, the vocational evaluator for the DVR indicates that despite her physical condition, she can do clerical work at home or telemarketing work at home. And both of those activities would be consistent with the ALJ's mental assessment of Ms. Schlieff's condition. I think I'll defer responding to the severity argument. I think we've addressed that in our brief. In sum, just note that the ALJ provided a very reasonable basis for discounting Dr. Ishii's opinion and for turning to the state agency opinions. And based on those opinions, found that she could perform a significant number of jobs and therefore was not disabled under the Act. And we therefore ask that the decision be affirmed.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to both counsel.
Thank you.